Welcome back to the Measure Twice Planners podcast. During this episode, we get to learn more about the Certified Financial Planner CFP designation experience requirement, and specifically how even self-employed and pro bono candidates can satisfy their experience without needing to join another firm or even working directly with planning clients. This episode's guest is the always generous Jackie Koski, who shares her creative CFP experience journey. If you enjoy our conversation, you may also consider watching the full video version that's only available to official members of Measure Twice Planners. You can learn more about full membership benefits, including over 30 hours of video content at measuretwiceplanners.com. And once you are a CFP professional, you can also report your CE hours as a member. Jackie Koski, we're excited to have you as a niche expert presenter. Once again, you have provided so much valuable information on our live calls, MTP Forensics, our mentorship call we had a few days ago. You have also presented on the superpowers of HSA. I think you're a superhero in the financial planning community and as a career changer. So your experience as a career changer definitely plays a part of our conversation today. How to meet the CFP experience requirement on the path to CFP professional designation. As a career changer, how difficult that can be, especially if you don't go right into working under another CFP professional. Before we talk about all the technical stuff and the things required to get experience hours, I'd love to hear a little bit about your career transition and why did CFP experience make such a big difference in your life?
Thanks for having me, Cody. You know, it's always good to hang out with you. But for me, so I technically retired from my corporate job. I was there for 20 years. Went through a master's program, got my master's, and decided to sit for the CFP. That was not a part of the original plan. But my biggest obstacle in my own head was the experience hours. I don't think I want to go down the traditional path. So how am I going to get experience hours? So I had to do a lot of digging to figure out, okay, the things that I have done in the past and the things that I'm doing now and want to do in the future, do those fall within the parameters of what the CFP board says is experience hours? As I was digging and doing all of my research, it turns out I can. What I thought was a challenge, and I probably did go the more difficult route because as a self-employed person, some work is pro bono, it still falls within the financial planning experience hours, but I have to have an attester. I have to submit each thing separately. And so I probably went the harder path, but it was a more satisfying path for me in order to get my experience hours. And so because I had so many questions around that myself and almost didn't go down the CFP road, I really just like to share with everyone that the CFP board, I believe within the last 10 years, kind of made some changes to what experience hours are and what qualifies for it. As I went down that path, I was able to look at the things that I was doing. It added up to more than the 6,000 hours that I needed and passed the exam, and I was able to get my CFP. So the experience hours just was critical to anyone. You can't even get your CFP until you have those. Mm. And I found ways to be able to earn it with the work that I was doing.
A lot of people think you do your education, exam, and then experience. And that's how it's kind of presented to you in the order of operations. We'll talk about how you can possibly like reverse, like you can actually get experience before those things, even before your education, before your exam. You know, some people tell me, well, you don't need a CFP designation to be a financial planner. Why is being a CFP professional important to you, especially in the beginning of your career?
In my opinion, and for a lot of people, including consumers, they do consider the CFP credential as the gold standard in the financial planning industry. And for me, I love personal finance. I love teaching, educating, and learning myself. And I've done a good job of that, but I knew that going for the CFP, studying for the exam, getting the experience, it was going to fill a lot of gaps. Hmm. And as I was doing that, I was glad to have, you know, the CFP credential to show that I've gone through every step of this process, become well-versed, well-trained, and know sort of from a 360-degree angle about personal finance, not just the things that interested me or things that, you know, I wanted to specifically dig into. So, having that gold standard credential, it is important. And because how else, if people don't know me, mm-hmm. how would they know that this person has a certain level of education? And so this just is a public way to confirm that I have done this additional education, training, ethics, and all of that, and makes it easy for the consumer as well to, you know, when they know what goes into becoming a CFP.
Going through the education, Like you really tighten your own screws of knowledge, even over the things you already knew from other personal finance media. Then there's also the social proof of, I want people to immediately know this is somebody who has education, they pass examinations, they have experience. So when they see CFP after your name, it's that extra level of like initial trust that you need to even start having these conversations with them. Separate from the social proof, sometimes it's kind of proving to yourself that you're worthy of even calling yourself a financial planner. Once you add it to your name, you're like, now I feel somewhat capable that like that I can have a conversation with another person on the other side of the table and not feel like an imposter, like I shouldn't be here. There are fantastic, absolutely incredible financial planners and financial advisors who do not have the CFP designation. And they have exceptional experience, education, right? They just didn't happen to go down this specific academic or route in terms of their designation. So CFP is not all or nothing, but I think that, like you said, whether or not it's the gold standard, again, like we don't really know that. But to me, it's seeming more of like kind of almost like a baseline rather than the gold standard. It's like, it's almost the minimum expected, especially, by the way, you talk about being self-employed. If you were to go work for another firm as a financial planner, financial planning firms, advisory firms, they're looking for that person with 3 years of experience, the CFP designation. By getting the CFP designation, even being self-employed, that also opens you up to future employment down the road if you decide that entrepreneurship isn't your thing.
Right. And just more opportunities in other ways as well. You know, some of my clients, they are academic institutions or they are professional organizations that would like to see that credential. So if anything, it's just giving me pluses and adding more to my body of knowledge and what I have to offer. So I'm very proud to have the CFP. And man, you know, it was hard. I mean, every piece of it, especially the exam, is tough. So it's not an easy process. So when I decided to do it, I knew it was going to be tough and I knew it was going to be a big challenge for me. But what I'm gaining from having that really makes a difference. And it helps with my own confidence that I filled in those gaps that I had. Don't know if I would have, you know, been able to really, you know, piece all that together. So I'm definitely a better professional and a better deliverer of the information and the support that I provide to like my clients. I'm glad that I'm able to provide that CFP level of education and instruction and support. And they deserve it.
So before we go into some of your creative ideas and all the research you've done, I want to share some of the basic research that anybody can find on the CFP Board website. First of all, there's two pathways for experience. So, you know, before we go into some of the creative ways that we can get experience, I'm just going to briefly walk through this. You can fast forward if you already know these things. There are two pathways. There's the standard pathway, which is 6,000 experience hours. We'll talk a little bit more about like what qualifies as experience. But that's effectively equivalent to about 3 years of full-time work if you're working, you know, if you got 40 hours a week for about 3 years, a little bit less. But there's two parts to the standard pathway to get those 6,000 hours. The experience must fall within one or more of the seven primary elements of the financial planning process: understanding the client's personal and financial circumstances, identifying and selecting goals, analyzing the client's current course of action and potential alternative courses of action, developing, presenting, implementing the financial planning recommendations, and then monitoring progress and updating. So what this really means is part one is saying you need to be working in at least one of those seven parts of the financial planning process effectively. Part two is that the experience can be satisfied through one or more of the following ways, which are personally engaging with individual clients, supporting a financial planner or the financial planning process directly or indirectly, interesting word there, supervising financial planners and or the financial planning process and may also have direct client interaction, completing an internship or the Financial Planning Association FPA's residency program, which we'll talk about as one of those alternate ways besides working directly with a firm, and then teaching college level courses in financial planning concepts. These are the two parts that are required for the standard path, which is the kind of the typical path. And then second to that, there's the apprenticeship pathway, which is 4,000 hours. So as you can imagine, since it's fewer hours, there's going to be more strict rules, you know, in parts there. So those 4,000 hours is equivalent to about 2 years of full-time work. So you can see most people would love to get their designation in 2 years rather than three. But with that said, there are actually three parts rather than two, and they're a lot more strict. So part one is must include experience in all seven primary responsibilities. So not one of seven or one or more, it's all of them, working in every part of the financial planning process. Part two is all those hours, 4,000 hours, must be delivered by personally engaging with individual clients. And then all 4,000 hours must be completed under the direct supervision of not just any financial professional, but another CFP professional. So a CFP professional has to be your direct supervisor when gaining those 4,000 hours. What is experience in terms of like what actually qualifies for those hours? And maybe we'll focus mostly on the standard pathway since we're going to be talking a lot about self-employed individuals along the way.
Talking about the 6,000 hours, that's the path that I had to go through and the path that most people do that, you know, isn't quite as strict. The CFP board officially talks about what experience hours are on their website. So it says qualifying experience includes activities involving the delivery of financial planning and services. And it lists a litany of activities, things such as doing a presentation, writing a blog, writing a book, being a journalist. Typically, people are thinking about doing financial plans, you know, all day long, and that's experience. And that does qualify, but that's not the only way to do it. And that's not primarily what I was doing. So each time that I submitted my experience, it would give me a dropdown. And one of the dropdowns would say, you know, is this from journalism? Is this from blogging and things like that? So those aren't things you think about, but there is a lot of quality work and education that you can provide doing those activities. And to me, it helps tremendously with advancing the financial planning profession. So those are the types of things that I was looking at that I knew I'd been doing for years. And it was nice to know that those things did fall within the parameters of the experience hours.
One thing that I learned from a previous presentation you did, you are so generous with your time and sharing. You really understand that the best way to learn is to teach. When you teach, you learn twice. So every time you present this information, it tightens your own knowledge. One thing you mentioned there is, I didn't realize this until you mentioned it, which was you don't have to wait for the exam to pass the exam before you start gaining experience hours. So it sounds like you actually have a lot more opportunities before the exam than after.
Yeah, that's a big deal, Cody. That's a really important point. So you can go back 10 years prior to passing the exam. And like you said, only 5 years forward. But frankly, you go through a lot of studying and a lot of time and a lot of commitment to pass that exam, and to not be able to use the credential for even 5 years is not that great. So for me, I went back about 9 years or so where I was doing this type of work. And so when people ask me the question, should I start getting my hours before or after the exam? And the answer is typically going to be, well, before the exam, you get 10 years. So that might be more helpful. Mm. And once you pass the exam, it's going to shorten your time that you need to get experience hours in order to officially use your credential. So ideally, you will have the 10 years. And a lot of people think, again, they think that it's just the one-on-one financial plans and creating financial plans. But think about all the other work that you are doing that is part of the financial process. And if you think about it, almost every step of the financial process starts with education. Mm. So most people that I know that's in this field, they love personal finance. They've been teaching for years. They've been doing classes. They've been blogging. They've been writing. They've been doing all these activities to advance people's personal finance education. And so think about all the things that you were doing, the time that you put in creating a presentation, in delivering it, in answering questions and all of that, you know, so what have you done that you can count even before you sit for the exam? And just don't short sell yourself, because it could be a lot more than you originally thought.
If you look at those, the verbs within those seven primary elements of financial planning, it includes the verbs analyzing, developing, presenting. So when you're developing an educational presentation, not just the time that it took to present, but the time that it went in doing the research and the education and really truly understanding what you were going to present. By the way, I did a quick calculation in my calculator, like I always do, Jackie, which is if you waited until you passed the exam to start getting experience, if you were doing the standard pathway, you'd actually have to have at least 23 hours a week dedicated to at least one of the seven primary elements. So if you wait until after the exam and you're not getting that direct communication with clients, you know, through the apprenticeship pathway, like you've got to get on it. Like you've got to get hustling with those hours. Could you share more examples of the types of things that you submitted in terms of your own experience that happened before you passed the exam?
I did all kinds of things. Now here's an additional hurdle that you have when you are self-employed or doing pro bono, you have to have a qualified attester. So again, I made it harder on myself by going the self-employed route because I did have to have, you know, someone to attest, and that attester does not have to be a CFP. It can be a CFP, it can be a CPA, it can be an attorney, and the CFP board lists all the different credentials or professionals that can do that. A PhD, you know, I did some things with one of my professors at Kansas State. So I did some cool things, and this is probably one of the more unique things, but at Kansas State, our case study, we had live real people. We had Ben and Lindsay, and they came in. It was a young couple, and we interviewed them. We each had to do a full financial plan on them. And so I was so impressed with that in my case studies class that I said to my professor, I said, this was so neat. I said, if you ever need another subject, I'd be happy to do it. You know, just give, like you said, just give back.
Oh, fine.
So she reaches out to me the very next semester. She goes, well, you mentioned that you would be willing. I'm like, sure, I'd still be willing to do it. So it's kind of cool. So I had to spend a lot of time in gathering this information. You know, now I'm thinking I get to help all these aspiring financial planners to do a case study on kind of a non-traditional person. A lot of financial planning clients are couples. A lot of them are older, but a lot of them are retiring at traditional age. I retire early. I'm a single person, single mom. So there's all these unique things that I thought would be really fun for the students. So putting all that together and spending the time to, kind of work with these students, interview with them and all that. So those were experience hours. And guess who's my attester? My PhD professor. So I just started turning on that lens that said, is this advancing the financial planning profession with what I'm doing? Does it fit one of these steps in the financial planning process? Does it include a financial planning topic? And so if I could check all of those and I had an attester, I was good to go. I started opening my mind more and more and realizing so much more that I had been doing falls within, you know, those parameters.
One common characteristic we're seeing within the financial planning industry, even more so I find with the career changers, is this sense of generosity and transparency. When they learn something, they're like running after people to tell. Like they're so excited to learn it, but not just for themselves, but to help others and create impact beyond their own financial situation. Thinking about content creation, whether you're going to write a personal finance book. By the way, I'm sure writing a personal finance book takes a lot of time and effort, like the editing process, like all those hours would most likely go toward that, toward those standard pathway.
And I know somebody that did that. He wrote a pretty popular book, and he did that maybe a few years before he decided to sit for a CFP, but all that counts for it. We have written content ourselves. We know how much time it takes because you're spending a lot of time trying to develop and deliver the material in a way that is going to be impactful for people. You know, sometimes you have to come up with, you know, some type of visual, and you have to put a lot of thought and time in it to be impactful, especially if it's short form. So now you got to take this big, complicated topic, you know, let's say, you know, substantially equal periodic payments, you know, rule 72T, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. So how do we distill it down and be able to deliver it in a way that can be easily understood? Content creators spend a lot of time on, if it's high quality, they have to spend a lot of time in putting that material together. The finished product you see, it could have taken four times what it took to deliver it.
I think I have a good example of that. There's this thing called Measure Twice Planners that has a 7-hour video course, right? So if I hadn't been a CFP professional, I created 7 hours worth of content, but it's not just the 7 hours, but I know every hour of content probably took 10 times more time, you know, at least 10 times.
I'd agree
it took
that.
Me 6 months to create 7 hours, right? So it's really, I like that you said you really have to think outside of the box. And the irony of creating content is, especially as a self-employed individual, if you're working at a firm, especially the larger, like the big finance firms, a lot of them do not allow you to create content. There's this irony of if you're working for a firm that you can get your hours through, they're not going to let you do these outside of the box things as often. But when you're self-employed, guess what?
Yeah, you can rule your own time, you know, where you can decide the things that you want to work on and the things. And that's why I say, even though in one breath, I will say, yes, I took the harder route by going self-employed and having attesters and all of that, but it was more gratifying to me. I got to focus on topics I was interested in and work with clients that really, you know, lit me up. So there mm-hmm. were some cool projects I had come my way that I just wouldn't have had it any other way. Even though it might have been easier to be working at a financial planning firm, I'm very satisfied that I went down this other route, because just the gratification and the satisfaction I get from the clients that I'm working with and the topics I get to focus on, that means a lot more to me.
I already know who I want to serve and how I want to serve. And I specifically want to serve people who aren't traditionally served by the industry, right? They look around, they're like, well, I don't really want to spend up to 3 years in the standard pathway working at a financial planning firm, which, by the way, might not even let me do financial planning. I might be just binding plans and getting coffee for people in the first 6 months. Not that it's bad to be a customer service customer service representative or anything like that. That's valuable even in terms of your future entrepreneurship. But sometimes people say, well, I'm really passionate about serving people who aren't traditionally served. And the only way I'm going to get my hours is by thinking out of the box. Like, yes, I'm going to get hours for actually serving clients. But in terms of accelerating that path, I need to think backward and forward in terms of how I can create content. You're not going to create content just for getting hours, right? It's right. Just like people don't give to charity for the tax deduction. You're going to create content to serve the specific community that you're passionate about. And by the way, you're going to get hours for it.
You hit the nail on the head for me. That's exactly the problem I was trying to solve for. So, one of my biggest clients, they were a very large county government. And we did a deep dive focus on public service loan forgiveness. There was this waiver last year that it was new to everybody, but because I had a baseline knowledge, it was pretty easy for me to dig into, but there was a lot of new stuff I had to learn to be able to deliver it to them. And it covered so many financial planning topics. We went into taxes and what reduces your AGI. We went into, the psychology of things, so that they could, appreciate and know that I recognize this program was designed to reward, people doing their public service. So that was an important part too, to get them to feel like, okay, I did make a right choice by, working and for public service. And I just want to understand this program. So trying to help them regain their trust with this program that had lost so much trust. So there was just so many financial planning topics within that. And I think, going through the CFP process definitely gave me a lot of tools to make that even more impactful than it would have been otherwise.
Written text, you can think about audio, video, like creating a YouTube channel, right? Blog posts, podcasts, having your own podcast, being on other people's podcasts, educational presentations, event speaking, maybe like once a month, you can do like a live thing in your community to just educate people if you're passionate about that. There are other things such as FPA residency. They offer 3 months of experience. That's 520 hours or so. And in just 1 week, it's practically a kind of a deep dive type of conference setting where you're learning among other aspiring financial planners and getting lots of experience really quickly. The other is what used to be the FPA externship. Now it's just called the externship. Hannah Moore is extremely generous with her education in the profession. Her externship program that's typically during the summer, 180 standard pathway hours, which is equivalent to about 1 month worth of experience. She also, Hannah Moore also has the Amplified Planning Core program, which is, in any time, not just during the summer, just like you can sign up and watch different courses. She has multiple courses, including real recordings with real clients, which is fun to see.
It's awesome.
From an outside perspective. Yeah, it's incredible. And those provide 20 standard pathway hours per course. So you get about a half a week worth of experience per course. With all that said, right, let's say you did the externship. You did Amplified Planning Core. You did extra, right? You do everything. You do the residency. With all that, if you did all those things, you'd still maybe have 4 months out of the 3 years. So right. I really do think, they haven't made it easy necessarily as a self-employed individual. Maybe in the future that'll change. I think kind of post-COVID, people are changing the way we think about entrepreneurship, and maybe the CFP board will kind of get on board and think about alternate ways you can receive experience, especially if you are a career changer that doesn't want to go straight into the traditional types of financial planning.
I was going to mention things like, presenting at industry conferences. So even if you don't have your CFP, especially career changes, you may have an area of specialty. Like for me, as HSAs, I'm you know, one of the few people that have like very extensive knowledge in that area. So I know the FPA, you could sign up to do a webinar, you can apply to do like a webinar on a certain topic. And so I decided to do one on HSAs, and I got a friend of mine that I knew that had a CFP that also was kind of interested in HSA. So we did the presentation together. So we spent many, many days meeting, we put the presentation together. So that was an easy way to get some additional hours. Plus, when I was at Kansas State, I ended up presenting at a conference with my professor. And so think about conferences, you know, think about what other unique body of knowledge or expertise do you have that you can share? And so you are not only getting your experience hours for those, but you're giving back. Like, I feel like that's the magical win-win, where you've got the populations that you're in, your community, whether it's online or not, or a certain group of people, whatever, they get the knowledge basically of a CFP or an aspiring CFP with their expertise, and you get to earn experience hours. So just some unconventional audiences that I did. I did a presentation for the Bogleheads, my chapter, the Bogleheads. I did a presentation for Camp Mustache, like for fire people. We looked at Social Security for fire people. So I was, you know, kind of turning that on its head, because most of the time when people are talking about Social Security, they're talking to 60-year-olds. Well, the fire community, I'm talking to 30 and 40-year-olds. So I had to completely change my perspective. And I ran these case studies based on much younger people. And I had to learn everything there was to learn about Social Security, but I wanted to do that. And then the certain clientele I had in mind was very different than what everyone else is talking about. So I've had these unique communities of people. And, you know, also it would be like maybe a group of women or a group of, you know, underserved populations or single moms. So I enjoyed working with groups that normally might not get this information or have this exposure. So it felt good. It was a good win-win to be able to serve my community and people that I knew would appreciate and needed this information, and also be able to get my experience hours. Think about what your expertise is and what you are really good at. Maybe you came from, you know, Silicon Valley tech, where RSUs and equity compensation was a big deal. You might have some special interests and done some extensive work and have extensive experience in that area. Maybe you worked in, you know, the benefits field, you know, and you have some special expertise there. So everyone has that superpower, you know, everyone has something that they are really good at, or a certain group of people that they have served. Maybe the military is another good one. You know, the thrift savings plan, that's nowhere in the CFP curriculum, but that's the equivalent of a 401k. And how many of the people that you served with in the military understands that? You can help educate them on that. I know a guy that does that. So the TSP, TRICARE, just whatever specialties you have, you can share them and also be able to get your experience hours.
Not until this conversation did I realize I actually could have gotten my CFP designation months earlier. Because I realized that I wrote dozens of blog articles at MeasureTwiceMoney.com. Before I had my CFP. If you are not a CFP professional, right? If you're trying to get your experience hours, if you present a niche expert presentation, by the way, like Jackie just did here, like I will attest to that. I will submit those hours. And it's not just the hour that you spend with me recording. It's, I know all of us, we measure twice. Like even before you showed up today, you know, you created an outline, you put in dozens of hours to make sure that when you came on the call today, that you could be your highest and best self in terms of your knowledge and expertise. So yeah, if anybody listening is looking for experience and wants to present and share their knowledge and expertise with other members of Measure Twice Planners, I'd be glad to be an attester to that. And that's just one creative example that Jackie's given us today.
Yeah. And the other thing, Cody, is so the HSAs that, you know, I'm kind of an expert now, I guess. I learned that from work out of necessity. Because when they first came out, they came out in, I think, 2004. My company started offering them in 2008. No one could answer my questions. So I did all this digging, all this research. And again, in my mind, if I'm taking the time to do it and learn it, why wouldn't I want to share it with everyone else? And I guess one other resource that might be worth looking at for anyone that is definitely trying to get their experience hours and better understand things is that the CFP board actually does a wonderful job on their YouTube channel. They have at least three videos about an hour long that specifically talk about experience hours for self-employed people and pro bono. And the best part about those videos is that towards the end, I would say like the last 20 minutes or so, they do nothing but take questions. So they're getting questions from aspiring CFPs that want to know how to get their experience hours. So you don't just get the content that was produced by the CFP board, but you get these great questions from other, you know, potential or aspiring CFPs. So those were good sources for me. And I went back and watched those because, you know, that's what I was trying to understand. So between what's on the CFP board website, the YouTube channel, and really digging into, you know, what they how they define experience hours, that gave me a lot of ammunition to, you know, go after some things that before I was just kind of short selling myself and wasn't going to count them.
Two other really important things is one, you don't have to wait till you start your education or exam to start tracking your progress with the CFP certification tracker. So Jackie, could you share what's required to start kind of setting your profile up on CFP website?
Yeah. So for me, I was at Kansas State and I remember our very first class in this set of six that we had to take was that we had to go on and set up a CFP board account. So even if you are just thinking about it, you can set up a CFP board account. You don't have to necessarily have start your education or anything, but there's so many good resources on there and you've got that candidate forum and all of that. So you
mentorships
set that up
as well, mentorship opportunities.
Exactly. Mentorship opportunities. You can see what people are talking about, people that are close to the exam and in all kinds of different phases of getting their CFP. So I started right away. And I think one of the first experience hours that I submitted was Hannah's amazing externship. And that gave me the extra motivation to say, well, that was 180. What else can I count? So it was a pretty easy process. Now, I feel like the platform is a little dated. So once you submit your first one, like I think it was like the 180 hours and everything. But once you submit it, and it's pending, you can't go back and look at what you put in. So I did start tracking, keeping a Word document to keep up with what I submitted, because I wanted to use the same verbiage and language that I used on all of mine. And normally I would include, like, if it was a presentation, I would include a link to the presentation. Or if it was an interview, I would include a link to the interview. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do everything I could do to make it super easy for the people at the CFP board that's reviewing my request for experience hours, for them to just say, yes, yes, yes. I don't need them questioning and wondering what I meant, what I did or whatever. So I was providing as much as possible. And so early on when I was submitting hours for different projects, I was kind of sort of floating test balloons to see, you know, how the process was and that this was okay. So I probably did 8 or 9 separate submissions. Again, since I'm self-employed, pro bono, most of what I'm submitting is projects that might have been 3 months or 6 months or something like that. I'm not consistently working at a job where I can dump them all at once. So I never got anything rejected because I was very, you know, mindful of what the rules were. I was very detailed in what I submitted to them and was as clear as possible, including, you know, a link. You can't attach anything, so you have to include a link and things like that to be able to do it. And then since I had to have a testers, I had to figure out the best way to be respectful of their time. So I would always let them know ahead of time or chat with them. And a lot of them would just say, yeah, if you need, you know, a tester for this, absolutely. We work together on this, or I know your work. I made sure they knew it was coming. And I didn't exactly know what the email looked like that they got. So I asked about that. So that's very simple. They get emailed something that says, this person has submitted this hours and listed you as a tester. Is this okay? And they hit yes, and they're done. So literally less than 2 minutes, they can, you know, you can get your tester to, you know, say, yes, this is fine, and you're good to go. But, you know, that's, of course, with letting them know ahead of time what to expect. I guess I was always thinking about, I don't want to inconvenience my tester, and I don't want them to have to fill out a bunch of stuff. Well, they don't. It's just a simple little email. They click yes, and that's it. And each time I would give them the number of hours I was submitting. And they knew, of course, what the project was and all of that. So I just did everything in my power to keep things very simple and following the guidelines so that I would get an easy yes, because I felt like submitting as a self-employed person or pro bono, there was definitely a lot more scrutiny, or could be a lot more scrutiny, than someone working in a financial planning firm. It took a little bit of extra effort on my part, but I was okay with that. And once I knew the rules, it just became more of a seamless process.
Just start banking and make a spreadsheet, make a Word file. And then lastly, don't be scared to ask. So experience@cfpboard.org, you can email your questions about if something may or may not work, but don't make an assumption that it won't count.
And you know what, Cody, in attending some of those webinars, that question always gets asked, like, how do I know if this will count? And the final answer from the CFP board representative is typically, if you think it might count, definitely submit it and we will let you know. Because when you're giving them a verbal example, trying to explain it, it might be hard for them to say yay or nay. But once you submit it, they can clearly see what you've done there. So they always say, if you think it might count, submit it. So that's what I was doing. But before, I was kind of holding back and kind of second guessing myself, and hearing the CFP board representative say, if you believe it counts, go ahead and submit it. It's very hard to us to pre-approve stuff ahead of time. So submit it. When in doubt, submit it. When in doubt, submit it. That was like the resounding response that they always had.
If you start creating educational content and sharing what you're learning with others, you're actually much more likely to pass the exam, because again, when you teach, you learn twice.
Right. That's a really important thing. All the education that I had been doing for many, many years, that definitely helped me with the exam. The fact that I retire early and then sort of shared, the process and everything. Well, I knew everything there was to know about getting money out of your retirement accounts early. And I guess one of my biggest takeaways, if you're listening to this, is remember that what you are learning, that means you probably know more than like 90%+ of the population. So you have some valuable knowledge that so many other people can benefit from. So think about organizations in your community, the YMCA, the United Way, groups that support what you are interested in, or someone you might want to serve. So during that window of collecting your experience hours, whether it's before the exam or after the exam, can you use any of what you already know to give back in a way that's meaningful to you? That's how I started looking at it. And early on, before I even knew I was going to take the CFP, that was always my goal. Now, there were some things that were paid, but there was a lot of things that were pro bono. But if I'm excited to do pro bono stuff where I'm not even getting paid for it, that speaks volumes. So think about all that valuable knowledge you have as you are approaching to earning your CFP. And who would you want to, share with or give back to during a time that could also benefit you? Not necessarily, not always in a monetary, maybe yes, maybe no, but either way, if it's something that lights you up, if it's a community or an organization that is just very meaningful to you, go share that. And more than likely, even when you become a professional, you'll be doing a little bit of that, anyway.
And the CFP board and all of us would benefit from more CFP professionals having that heart of generosity, really the heart of a planner, heart of a teacher. We really appreciate you sharing your additional expertise that you can't find all this stuff on the CFP board website. So you shared the stuff we can't see that's hard to find. I really appreciate you being here. Any last words before we wrap up and put this on the platform and put this on the podcast?
Well, I love all the work that you do. And I feel like there's people watching even when you think they're not. So when you were doing Measure Twice Money, I was reading all of your content. I knew if you put it out, it was really good. And I think this was even before you had your CFP. So people start to look at what you're doing. They can easily see the quality of what you're doing. So you influenced me, as someone that was, part of this FIRE community, that you went down this path. And there's so many others that inspire me because they're approaching things a little bit differently, but they are making very positive contributions to the profession. So I just really want to wave more people in that are looking at things through a different lens and having a different approach than what traditional financial planning looks like. We will be the ones that start to set the tone and the perception of the financial planning profession. And sometimes that's not so great. So, I kind of wavered about whether or not I wanted to get my CFP and be in the planning world. And my final conclusion was that I could either stay on the outside and be critical or have whatever negative preconceived notions that I had, or I could be an insider and be a part of the change. And I see a lot of the change happening, so many modern, unique and refreshing approaches to financial planning. That's the financial planning world I'd like to be a part of.
So Jackie ends with Gandhi, be the change you wish to see in the world, in the financial planning world. Well, thank you so much. I'm excited for us all to, take this information, use it, implement it, and also seek out some of these additional resources that will be shared in the show notes. Thank you so much, Jackie, and I'll see you around, certainly.
All right. You're welcome. It's always great, Cody. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed listening to our conversation, would like to watch the full video interview, or consume over 30 hours of other valuable educational content, please go to measuretwiceplanners.com for more information about those full membership benefits.